This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
And all guns should be Glocks. All Glocks should be 9mm and Model 19. A generation 4 or 3.
Hi folks, this is Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. This is episode 233. I'm going to talk about traveling with guns. Recently, someone sent me an email, and I'm sorry I don't have the email right up here in front of me right now. An email about traveling with handguns. He wanted me to cover it, how I travel with guns, period. So I'm going to do that. I have covered this a little bit before. It's on my YouTube channel, so if you want to see a short YouTube video, just go to YouTube and search Handgun World. You'll find my channel, Handgun World. I'll put a link in the show notes to my YouTube channel as well, so you can go straight to it. So just find the show notes for this episode 233, and you can look it up. Besides the YouTube, I did a guest spot over at the Road Gunner podcast. And by the way, here's a quick shout out to the unnamed trucker at the Road Gunner podcast. It's an excellent show. You should be listening to that. Several months ago, last fall, unnamed trucker wanted to take a little time off, or he had something going on. He asked me to do a guest spot. So we talked about traveling with handguns. So I'll cover some of what I talked about over there. I had an opportunity to interview some people that were at the Mag 40 class, but that airs over on the Road Gunner podcast. So anyway, go ahead and listen to that, and I'm going to cover some of my own ideas right here. This is probably going to be a relatively short show this week. I am slammed this week with a lot of work. Been out of town most of the week, had to work a trade show, and then Ben Branham and I had to jump in his truck and head north up to Dallas to teach our Beyond Concealed Carry Level 2 two-day class. So by the time you hear this, we will probably be... probably just finishing up the 2-day class, Beyond Concealed Carry Level 2, up in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Hey, by the way, I'll try to get you some interviews from that and maybe try to get you even a little bit of sound footage from it. See what I can do about that. Okay, traveling with handguns or with guns, period. First, let me talk about the why. Why do you want to travel with guns? Now, I'm going to talk both about vehicle and airplane travel. If you do like I do, if you're gone, 12 to 14 days a month and put on between 2,000 and 3,000 miles a month, driving to a lot of strange areas that you're not really used to going to, I think it's a very good idea to stay armed. And I think it's a very good idea to be ready to use that weapon, because you never know what kind of situation you're going to find yourself in. You never know what kind of an unfamiliar area that you're going to be in. Like I always say, we don't go looking for trouble, but sometimes trouble finds us. And when you're in a strange area, sometimes it's hard to avoid the bad parts of town, if you know what I mean, because you don't know the bad parts of town normally as you do in the area that you happen to live. So, carry a weapon and carry it readily accessible. Since I'm talking about driving, let's talk about driving first. I believe that it's important to have your gun readily accessible in case that awful occurrence happens where you have to use it. I was having dinner the other night with a friend of mine, named Chuck. So Chuck, here's a shout out to you. And we were kind of talking about this very subject. We were talking about how we like to keep guns in our vehicles. And we'd like to talk about where to keep them and what is probably the best method. Now, I'm a firm believer that a weapon in your car is really not much good if you can't get to it quickly. I often have a long gun in the trunk of my car, in the trunk of my Honda, and I'm kind of rethinking that. I'm kind of changing my mind about keeping it in the trunk, because how can I get it out of the trunk quickly? How can I get back into my trunk quickly and get my long gun? That's going to be pretty tough. So I'm probably going to be stuck with just using my handgun. Right now, my theory has been, I'll keep a long gun in the trunk in case I get stranded somewhere. And maybe I know I'm not going to be able to get home. I might be stranded in my vehicle, or I might be stranded in some kind of a hotel in a nasty area or out in the country or someplace where it's not very secure, or who knows where I may end up. Okay, so it's good to have a long gun if I have to stay in a ratty hotel somewhere in some risky, marginal area. It's good to have that long gun in my car so I can take it into the hotel that's not very good, wherever I happen to be. Okay, that's a consideration. And then, therefore, I don't have to worry about time, because once I reach my hotel or once I reach wherever it is that I'm staying, you know, I got my handgun on me and I can go retrieve my long gun and keep it in the room with me pretty much at my leisure. But I'm thinking about when I'm going to be on like a long 3-hour, 4-hour, or 5-hour drive. Then it might make sense to keep that long gun in the front of my car or behind the back seat somehow, concealed so that it doesn't look like a gun. In the state of Texas, we have to keep them concealed. We cannot have any loaded guns out in plain sight in our vehicle. Can't do that. You don't need a license to carry any loaded gun in Texas. You don't need a license to carry any loaded gun in Texas in your car. Your car is an extension of your home in the state of Texas. If you get out of your car, then you have to have a CHL. But in your vehicle, you can have long gun or a handgun. Doesn't matter. So what is it that I'm thinking about doing? Well, I'm thinking about putting it in the front seat or right behind the back seat and getting some kind of a case. And this is where I think I'm going to use my AR-15 for carrying, because I've got the collapsible stock on my AR-15 on both of them. And what I can do is I can collapse it and put it into a pretty small case. I'm trying to find some kind of a soft case that doesn't look like a gun case, and I'll probably cover it up with a towel or a blanket or something like that, where it's still going to be pretty easily for me to access. It'll be loaded with a magazine in it with 28 rounds and one in the chamber and the weapon on safe. You know, I was talking to my friend about that, and, you know, quick access is so important. Quick access. Fights are unexpected, and the time that you have to go to your gun is usually not going to be a very long time at all. So I don't want to leave a gun without a round in the chamber. I don't want to carry a gun in my vehicle, or really any time. If I'm carrying a gun for self-defense, I don't want to carry one without a round in the chamber. I heard Tom Gresham say the other day, a gun with no round in the chamber is an unloaded gun. And I think he's 100% right about that. So easy access in my vehicle. So when you're traveling with a gun, make it easy access. This is what I like about handguns. As most of you know, I've repeated it many times. I'm not going to repeat it again. You know how I carry my handgun, usually my Glock 19 or Glock 17, in my vehicle to where I can quickly access it, but it's concealed. Most of you know how I do that. On your body carry for handguns, I think, is still the best in a vehicle. I think it's better than off-body carry. I really like appendix carry for the reason it's so easy to access when sitting in a car. Yeah, I know you're going to sometimes sweep, or almost all the time, you're going to sweep your thighs. You know what, folks? There's trade-offs. I mean, if you're drawing the pistol properly and you're not putting your booger hook on the bang switch when you're not supposed to, you're going to sweep your thigh for a split second. I think the chances of you shooting yourself in the thigh are pretty slim if you have to draw your gun from the appendix carry position. Okay, whether you're a lefty or a righty, it doesn't matter. But behind the hip, still, it's not that tough. You know, behind the hip, carrying it back there, it's not that tough to access it quickly when you're in the vehicle if you need it. I still think that's the fastest way to access, is when you're carrying the gun anywhere on your body. Ankle carry is a good thing to consider when you're driving. It's pretty easy to reach down and grab it off your ankle. When you're seated in your car, it's pretty easy to reach down and grab that pistol off of your ankle. Some people mount it underneath the steering wheel where it's concealed, and they can just reach below the steering wheel. You know, whatever. Quick access. However you can set it up. Of course, the steering wheel is off body. I like to keep it on body. Now, traveling long distances with a handgun. I know a lot about the areas that I go to. I guess what I'm going to try to tell you is you need to know the laws in your state. Every state seems to have different, sometimes quirky laws about traveling with loaded guns. If you travel state to state, boy, you really got to pay attention to interstate laws. Go to handgunlaw.us. That's a great resource. Handgunlaw.us, a terrific website. I'll put a link in the show notes for that. Know what's going on. I mean, there's big differences. If I drive from Texas to New Mexico, which I barely go to New Mexico, completely different laws about having guns and vehicles and concealed carry and stuff in New Mexico versus Texas. Texas to Louisiana, yeah, not so much. I can pretty much do whatever I want in Louisiana that I can do in Texas. Same with Oklahoma. Matter of fact, in Oklahoma, I can open carry if I want. I can open carry in Louisiana, too, although it doesn't seem like a whole lot of people do it. But, you know, traveling within Texas where I live, it's pretty easy. I don't really have to worry about, you know, too much and crossing county lines and things like that. I have a CHL, and so with the CHL, I'm pretty much good to go traveling around. Same thing goes for long guns. So driving is so much easier, obviously, than flying when you are traveling with firearms. And, of course, Unnamed Trucker on the Road Gunner podcast, and also Paul Lathrop on the Politics and Guns podcast. Both those guys are truckers. So they've got pretty good shows and pretty good information on traveling with handguns because they do it all the time, state to state. So check them both out, Road Gunner podcast and also the Politics and Guns podcast. And just a quick shout out to those guys, Paul Lathrop and Unnamed Trucker. Hope you guys are doing well. All right. So driving around makes it pretty much the easiest to be transporting handguns. It also gives you plenty of time ahead of time to look up what the state laws are, and you know, you can plan in advance. And since traveling by car or truck is always so much slower than by air or by train normally, that you got time to stop and make changes with your firearms if you need to before you cross state lines, for example. Now, let's talk about flying on airplanes. A lot of people think this is really hard, and it's not. It's not hard to fly on an airplane with a handgun or a rifle. It's not hard at all. A lot of people overthink this. I really do think that people overthink it. They get too freaked out. If they've never done it before, I can understand. If it's your first time taking a flight with a handgun, I can understand kind of being a little edgy about it. I get that. So let me try to calm your fears. I've been doing this a long time, folks. I've been traveling by plane with handguns for 7 years now. And as a matter of fact, I'm in an undisclosed location right now that I had to fly to. And I brought my Smith & Wesson 9mm Shield. Wonderful little pistol, by the way. So I travel with it with no problem whatsoever. And as I do normally, I always travel with at least one, most likely two handguns. Now, I don't travel with long guns. I don't air travel with long guns. I'll tell you how to do it, but I don't do it. I normally travel, I'll almost always travel with handguns. So here's what you do. First of all, you need to make sure that you have a hard-shelled, lockable case. There's all kinds of places to get a good hard-shelled, lockable case. And I think the one I got, I have two of them. I think one I paid $15 for and the other one $12 or $13 for at gun shows. You don't have to have anything expensive. You can get an expensive Pelican case if you want, you know, or some of the other high-quality cases. That's fine. Whatever you can afford, I'm just telling you, you don't need a whole lot of really super expensive cases. Why? Because it's going to go inside your checked luggage. My checked luggage usually has a ton of clothes in it. So I put the case, after I check it in with the airlines, I put the case on top of my clothes. So, you know, the gun's very well protected. I don't have to worry about whether the gun's going to be protected or not in that case, you know, to be protected from damage. All right, so get yourself a hard-shelled, lockable case. Now, let's talk about locks. I made a mistake once, and I think it was on my YouTube video. The mistake I made was telling people to buy TSA locks. Don't buy TSA locks. I'm going to tell you why. Nobody should be opening your gun case after it's properly checked in and declared with the airlines. Nobody should be opening it. If they open it, then that gun and your luggage can no longer fly to its destination. So, for example, if you're making a connection and they're changing your luggage from one plane to another, if someone from TSA were to open your pistol in that case, or open the case with your pistol in it, by law, your bag is not allowed to go to your destination with you. So don't get a TSA lock. And I've had people say to me, well, do you have a TSA lock? No, I don't. And I've had the ticket agents at there say, well, you know, if you had a TSA lock, you could bypass some of the screening procedures. I say, yes, I know, but I'll be happy to go through the screening procedures. At San Antonio International Airport, where I fly out of, the regulations there is I have to go to a separate TSA screening room if I'm checking in my gun. I got to go to a separate TSA screening room. And normally I'm in there one-on-one with a TSA agent who inspects my luggage. And sometimes they ask to look inside the gun case and check out the gun. Most of the time they don't, but every once in a while they do. And then once they approve, they put the gun inside the checked bags. They put it on the carousel for me, and it goes on to my flight. Well, I'll be happy to do that. I put a regular lock. I got a master lock on there, just a regular keyed master lock. And no TSA locks. You know what? Once you check in your firearm, TSA has no business opening it up again. They checked it thoroughly and cleared it. When you put your luggage on the flight, why would there be any reason for anybody to go back into your luggage and back into your gun case and open it up and check it out? So, no TSA locks, okay? Just get yourself a good lock. Regardless of what people tell you, regardless of what the airlines or TSA tells you, you do not, by any kind of law or regulation that I know of, you are not required to have TSA locks. Now remember, every airline has different procedures. And it's the airline's procedure, it's the airlines that make the rules, okay? It's not TSA, really. And it's not the government or the airport, it's the airline. So typically, what you need to do is you need to get on your airline's website, and they all have information on there about checking firearms. If you have any questions, call them. I typically fly American and Southwest. Out of San Antonio, I typically fly Southwest and American. Both of them are very easy to deal with. I've had great luck with both of them checking firearms. Here's what you do. After I pack my luggage, what I do is I double check to make sure my pistol's unloaded. I put it in the case with the action open. I take both magazines and I put them in a separate part of my luggage. I do not put them in the same case as the pistol. That way, if the person that looks at the gun has even a small lick of knowledge, they may see that the action's open and the gun is unable to fire. It's the proof that the gun is unloaded. And then I lock it up. So it's in my case, action open, locked up, and I go to the airport. When I get to the airport, I go to the baggage check-in counter. Now, one thing about flying with a handgun, you can't check your bag with the SkyCap. I don't think. I don't do that because I don't think the SkyCaps are allowed to check in that gun. I don't know. That's a good question. I'm going to research that one. If some of you have ever done that and it worked, let me know. I don't think it does, but I could be wrong. I go and I wait in line. So make sure you get to the airport early. And when it's my turn to check in my luggage, this is what I say. I walk up to the counter and I say this. Now, the language you use is very important, and your demeanor is very important. Don't look scared. Don't be shaking. Relax. It's not a big deal, folks. It's no big deal. You're not breaking a law. You're not a terrorist. Don't worry. It's not a big deal flying on an airplane with a handgun. So my language goes exactly like this. I walk up to the counter. I say, hello, I'm Bob Main. I pull out my ID. And the next words out of my mouth are the most important. I say, I have an unloaded handgun to declare. I'll say that again. I have an unloaded handgun to declare. You want to make sure that you specify that it's unloaded. Is that required? I don't think so. Why do I say it? Because it already plants the seed in that ticket agent's mind. It's unloaded. It's not a threat. It's okay. It's not going to fire by itself and all of a sudden shoot up the whole airport all by itself. Right? Like ignorant people sometimes think. You know, they just think that guns shoot themselves, right? That's just kind of the way some people who are gun ignorant think. So it's very important, and I put a little pause in there. You know, a little pause. Hi, I'm Bob Main. Give him my ID. I have an unloaded handgun to declare. Slow down a little bit when you say unloaded. And use the word declare. They just seem to like that. I have an unloaded handgun that I would like to declare. It's all you have to say. The ticket agent will know what to do. Only one time I had an agent not know what to do. The baggage agents or ticket agents. Only had one of them not know what to do. They had to get a supervisor to find out what to do. It must have been a new person that didn't know what to do. Because most of them who have even a little bit of experience, they know what to do. They will get a form. Every airline has a different form. They'll get a form. They'll have you sign the form. And they'll have you probably put your name and flight number and destination and stuff like that. And basically you're signing saying that you are declaring that this is an unloaded weapon. Now, they reserve the right to look at your gun if they want to. Most of the time, they don't. Like I said, they typically send me to a special screening room. And sometimes even that person doesn't look at the gun. Okay? So basically, what they will do is they will ask you to unlock your case. Now, here is the way I think it's supposed to work, but I go by whatever they ask me to do. I'm very compliant. One thing you got to do is be very compliant with these people, okay? I believe you'll have a lot less hassle being very compliant. Some of them will tell you that the form must go inside the pistol case. The form that you fill out and sign, some of them will tell you that it must go in the pistol case. It's really not supposed to go inside of the pistol case. It's not a good idea, and I'll tell you why. Because if TSA should happen to open your luggage, not the pistol case, but if they open the luggage, you want them to see that form on the outside of your pistol case. That tells them that it's been checked. That tells them it's been properly declared, the form is signed, and the weapon's been checked to be unloaded. If that form is on the inside of the case, they're not going to be able to tell that, can they? Okay, now, you might be saying, well, Bob, TSA has no business going through my bag after I check it on the airplane, like if I'm making a connection. You're right, they don't, but they might. They still might. So insist that the form that you sign, it's usually not very big, insist that it be taped to the outside of your pistol case, your locked pistol case. Every time I ask if they could please tape it to the outside, I've only been turned down once. And I fly a lot. I fly a couple times a month with a handgun. So ask if you could have it taped on the outside for that particular purpose. Then relock the gun case. If they've asked you to unlock it, make sure you relock it. Put the key in a very safe place. Don't lose the key. Then you're done. That's it. Then you complete the normal check-in process. Make sure they tag your bags. By the way, always make sure you check those luggage tags that they put on your luggage. Make sure that your luggage is tagged to go to the right place. One time I caught them tagging it to the wrong place by mistake. And that would have been a disaster because then my luggage would have gone to a different place than I was going to. So it's a good thing I caught it and I asked them to re-tag it properly, and they did. Especially if you got a gun in there. You want to make sure that that bag is tagged to the right destination, the same place you're going to. Don't freak out if your luggage doesn't arrive on time. That's happened to me. You know, airlines are not perfect. They sometimes have delayed luggage. It's happened to me more than once. Nothing ever happened to my pistol. My pistol got there with the luggage just like it was supposed to. Not a big deal. Okay, so that's pretty much the process. And then when you get to your destination, then you can open your pistol and do whatever you need to do. Please wait until you get outside of the airport, get outside of the secured airport before you take your pistol out of the case and load it up. I'm pretty sure the secured area of an airport is off limits. I think any airport that's off limits for carrying a loaded gun. I wait until I'm completely out of the airport, till I get to my rental car or till I get to my hotel or wherever it is that I'm making my first stop. That's when I find time to open the case, load my pistol, and then carry it. Now, it's very important that you also pay attention to the laws pertaining to your destination. Now, this is where things can get a little tricky. Your connecting flights and your destination. Okay. When I book flights, if I'm going to the East Coast, I try very hard not to book a connection through New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Maryland, places like that. Those anti-gun states, I do not like to connect through those states. If I'm going to East Coast, I'll try to connect through Detroit or Chicago or Cleveland or Charlotte or Atlanta or Nashville. You know, places like that if I have to make a connection. Gun-friendly cities and states. I've heard horror stories of people going to Florida and they fly through. Let's say they're going to North Carolina as their final destination, but they have to change planes in New Jersey, for example, or New York or whatever. And they get stranded. For some reason, they don't make their connection. Maybe bad weather or whatever. Now they're stranded in New York, and they have to reclaim their luggage. Ooh, and guess what? You got to reclaim your luggage with a gun in it. And in New York, you're not supposed to have that gun. Uh-huh. That can cause a problem, can't it? I've heard a lot of bad horror stories about that, especially in New Jersey as well. So pay real close attention to your connection cities and your final destination. I will go out of my way, and even if I have to pay slightly more for the ticket or I have to have a longer delay somewhere, I will avoid connections in gun-unfriendly cities or states. And I named pretty much the ones that I stay away from. Chicago, I guess, is one I don't like to go through either. Because in the city of Chicago, until they get it changed, you can't have a loaded gun. And as a matter of fact, even if they do pass concealed carry, I think they should be passing that soon, shouldn't they? I think Illinois is supposed to be complying with the court order to pass concealed carry. But it's probably going to be so restrictive, it's going to be ridiculous, and I'm not going to want to be subject to those restrictions. So I'll try to avoid going through Chicago for connecting flights. Now, going West Coast, I rarely fly to California, but if I'm going to fly to California, just remember 10-round magazines. And I don't think California accepts a huge amount of concealed carry licenses, do they? Let me look this up. Okay, I'm checking this out on handgunlaw.us. No, California does not accept my Texas CHL. No surprise there. So if I'm going to fly to California, I can't carry my gun anyway. If I want to carry my, if I want to take a gun to California, not sure why I would if I can't carry it, and if I'm only going to be visiting California for a short time. But if I was going there to be, to, you know, to do like, you know, some kind of pistol competition, or if I was going to go there for some kind of a show where I had to show my gun, or do a training class in California, or be an instructor and teach a class, something like that, then I got to be aware of the magazine restrictions. So I got to make sure that I don't, you know, load. Matter of fact, I'd probably have to buy 10 round magazines for my Glock, if I'm not mistaken. I couldn't even, if I'm not mistaken, I don't even think I'd be allowed to take my 17 round magazines into California. Somebody help me out and correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I don't think I would be allowed to even take those magazines into the state of California. So I might want to take a 1911 or a single stack gun that doesn't hold more than 10 rounds, or buy some 10 rounds for my Glock pistols if I'm going to go to California or Oregon or Washington. They do not allow my Texas CHL. I think I can have the high capacity magazines in those states, but they do not allow my Texas CHL in Oregon, Washington, California, and Nevada. So screw the West Coast. I'm sorry. No offense to you people who live out there, but I'm going to try real hard not to go there if I have to pack a gun. Now, I just noticed something. The state of Washington will allow my Utah permit. I have a Utah non-resident. So I could go to Washington, I guess. That's not going to be a problem. I guess I can carry my gun up in the state of Washington because it looks like it accepts the Utah permit. So I guess there is reasons to have permits from other states. So that's kind of cool there. But anyway, pay attention to your destination and pay attention to where you're going, because that can be a big deal and you could find yourself into trouble. Now, a couple of other things about traveling with your handgun. Let's talk a little bit about ammunition. Most airlines, I think, limit you to a certain weight in ammunition. I think American and Southwest limit you to 11 pounds or 12 pounds of ammunition. Ammunition adds up pretty quickly in weight. 11 or 12 pounds is not that much. So the best thing is, if you're going to travel with large amounts of ammunition, I would suggest shipping it ahead of time. I don't know how many boxes and how many rounds make up 11 pounds of ammo. I don't know how much one box of 9mm weighs. So, again, I don't know how many rounds that is that I could carry, which equals 11 pounds of ammunition. But I normally don't carry that. I normally carry about 50 rounds. They say it's supposed to be in factory boxes. In other words, you're supposed to travel with factory-bought ammunition and keep it in its original box. You know what I've done? One time I bought some Federal Hydroshocks, and they come in a hard plastic case that is awesome for traveling. I bought some Federal Hydroshock. I bought some low recoil 9mm personal defense Federal premium ammunition one time. And it comes in an awesome plastic, hard plastic case. And I can fit 25 rounds in each of these cases. So I pack up two of these and I take 50 rounds with me. And it barely weighs even 1 pound. So, or maybe even, it might be a couple of pounds with both of them put together. So I'm well under the weight limit for ammunition. And that satisfies the factory box. They don't care that I'm not carrying Federal brand ammunition in a Federal box. All they care about is that it's in a factory box. In fact, most of the time I'm carrying either Corban or Double Tap ammo in those boxes. Do not put the ammo in the same locked case as the pistol. That's not allowed. But you can keep it in the same checked bag. There's no problem keeping it in the same checked bag. If you're checking two bags, you can go ahead and put it in your other bag that's separate from your pistol if you want to do that. It might not be a bad idea if you're checking two bags. pistol in one, ammo in the other. But I've never been given any kind of a hard time at all about keeping ammunition in the same piece of luggage. It just cannot be in the same hard shell case as the gun. Holsters, magazines, all that, no problem. One time I left a Glock 19 magazine in my carry-on, and it was not loaded. It was an unloaded Glock 19 magazine. They inspected my bag and they looked at it, but they let it go through. I mean, it's mostly plastic and it's harmless. So all it is just an unloaded Glock 19 magazine. I'll tell you another story. One time, way back when I first started flying with handguns, I also went through the security checkpoint with a loaded Glock 19 magazine. Now, that was not fun. I'll tell you how it got in there in a minute. But, of course, you know, their lights went off and bag check. And when they found that thing, they weren't happy. And I had to fill out a bunch of forms and reassure them I was a good guy and give my ID and all that. And TSA sent me a letter a few weeks later saying, please don't do that again, Mr. Maine. It was not a loaded gun, but it was a loaded magazine. I lost the magazine and all the good ammo that was in it. So at that time, it was about a $15 magazine. I think the ammo that was in it was worth as much as or more as the magazine itself. You know what happened? And this is where you got to be careful at the shooting range. I had my backpack. My everyday backpack was at the shooting range with me, as well as my range bag. I can't remember why, but I took both bags to the range. And my son was with me. And my son was about 10 or 11 years old at that time. And when I got done shooting, I was packing up. I handed a loaded Glock 19 magazine to my son, and I asked him to go put that in my bag. Well, what I meant was to put it in my shooting bag. He put it in my backpack because, I mean, you know, he didn't know. I told him to go ahead and put it in my bag. So that's what he did. Of course, I didn't know that it was in there. I didn't know my loaded Glock 19 magazine was in my backpack. I thought my son had put it in my shooting bag. And it was like a week. It was in there for a week, and then I took a flight, and of course, then they found it when I went through security. So make sure you inspect all your bags before you go to the airport, including your carry-ons, because you never know how things can find their way into spots where they're not supposed to be. Okay, so there's a little bit of traveling with handguns. It's really not that big of a deal. Just don't get too freaked out about it. As far as long guns, I've never traveled with them. So I've done some research here, and I've done some reading, and I've talked to a lot of people who have traveled with long guns. And the best thing I can tell you is you follow almost the same process, except that the case that your long gun goes into is probably not going to fit into your luggage unless you got some really big luggage. Now, there is some luggage where you could probably put an AR-15 in there. You know, there are some big backpacks on wheels, and there's some huge duffel bags that you probably could put an AR-15 in a hard case that's locked up and fit that into your luggage. So the best thing I can tell you is you're going to have to check it separately as if it is a piece of luggage and make sure that it's locked up. Just make sure that nothing on it indicates that there's a gun in there. Okay? Just make sure that nothing indicates that there's a gun that is in your case that you're checking your rifle or your shotgun into the airport. I would suggest if you're going to go to a destination for a long time, you know, more than a couple of days or even more than a week, and you're going to take a rifle or a shotgun, it's not a bad idea to try to work out a deal with a dealer, an FFL dealer in the area, and ship it to him. Ship it to the FFL dealer. Obviously, he's going to have to receive it in, and then he's going to have to do the paperwork again for you to get it back, and you're going to have to pay his fee. But I've heard of people doing that. Now, that's kind of, It's kind of complicated, and some people don't want to do that. They don't want to, you know, let their gun go into the possession of the dealer temporarily and then back into your possession. Then you got to do the whole process over again when you return home. So, but I have heard of people doing that. I just thought I would throw that out there. I don't think that I would really do that myself or suggest that you do it. Take it on the plane with you. Do some research on it. But the process is probably going to be very similar to taking a handgun on an airplane. Traveling with long guns in your vehicle. Every state seems to have different laws about that. So just read your state law and see what it says. In some states, they can't be loaded. In some states, they can be loaded. In some states, they have to be out in plain view. In other states, they have to be concealed. So, you know what your weapons laws are in your state or your county or your jurisdiction for transporting shotguns, rifles, long guns, and obey those laws. Oh, a couple of other things here I just thought of. You also need to study up on the laws that pertain to whether you need to notify a police officer if you're carrying. For example, in Utah, you do not have to notify a police officer that you're carrying. In Texas, you do. So if you're going to another state and you're planning on carrying your gun, make sure that you know that. You know, do you have to tell them? That's very important. You don't want to be getting in trouble and getting yourself arrested in another state. You know, for example, in Louisiana, you have to tell somebody. You have to tell the police. Excuse me. You have to tell the police that you're carrying. So, you know, make sure you're aware of the notification laws. All right. That pretty much wraps up what I want to say on traveling with guns. If you have anything else you want to add, that's what my email is for, bob@handgunworld.com. That's what the Gun Rights Radio Network Forum is for. I start a thread on each show. Check that out. My sub forum is under my show name. If you're not a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network Forum, join, sign up. It's free. You can also find me on Facebook. Hey, do me a favor. If you want to talk guns, become a friend on my Handgun World podcast Facebook page. Just search Handgun World on Facebook. Don't search Bob Main. Don't connect with me on that one if you want to talk guns. That's for personal stuff mainly. So I got a separate page for this show that I prefer that you friend me on and then follow up with me there. Or, as always, you can call in a voicemail at 210-646-1727. That's 210-646-1727. Or if you look in the margin about halfway down my Handgun World page, you'll see a big Call Me button. And it'll automatically connect your phone with my voicemail, and you can leave me a voicemail that way if you don't want to dial a number. If you happen to be traveling down the road and you don't want to dial a number, but you can get on my page, you can press the Call Me button, you can do that too. That's an easy way to leave me a voicemail. I would love to hear from you. And I'll put you on the show, by the way. So if you don't want your voicemail aired on this show at some point, tell me that when you leave me the message, okay? But I'd love to hear your comments if you have something to add. Speaking of comments, I want to address a couple of email comments. Actually, I think it was Damien that voicemailed it in, and I didn't get a chance to play his voicemail recently. I mentioned a few episodes back that the Glock factory sights suck. And Damien suggested that I clarify myself, and he's right. Here's what I mean when I say that the Glock factory sights suck. I don't think that they're really terrific sights. They'll get the job done. They will get the job done. I see people shoot the factory Glock sights just fine. I see them go to IDPA matches and do just fine. They are made out of plastic. That can be sometimes a problem. I have heard of the front sight breaking pretty easily doing certain training exercises, or even the rear sight. Like, for example, when you're using one hand to cycle the action on your semi-automatic pistol. You got to use the rear sight. And you know what? You can break that plastic rear sight fairly easy, or chip it. I've heard that they become chipped pretty easily, the rear sight and the front sight. So the fact that they're made out of plastic, to me, makes them kind of undesirable. And I happen to think that the rear notch is too small. I kind of like the white outline on the back. The front is kind of a big sight, bigger than I like it. I like it to be a smaller sight or have some kind of a, you know, pointy shape to it, which it doesn't have. So overall, you know, the sights are functional to a point. There's better. And the good thing about sights is sights don't cost much, and they're a very easy upgrade. And sights are such a personal thing anyway. I rarely leave the factory sights on any pistol. I like certain types of sights if I'm going to use them. You know, I do a lot of point shooting now because I've learned the skill and it's so cool. But, you know, when I'm past 7 yards, I'm pretty much not point shooting anymore. So I'm using sighted fire. Therefore, sights, I like to have certain types of sight pictures. Somebody asked me about speed sights. I can still recommend speed sights as a decent product. I don't sell them anymore because I couldn't have a really good working relationship with Don at Speed Sights. He didn't have a whole lot in stock as much as I needed it. I had a lot of people ordering the Speed Sights, and he wasn't carrying the stock that I needed. And it just kind of was not real good customer service, in my opinion. But every once in a while, if you check his site, his website, speedsights.com, he'll show that they're in stock. I still recommend them. I still think that the Trijicon HDs do a really good job and do pretty much everything the speed sights will do. And the Ameriglow Hackathon sights with an orange front, those do very well, and they do almost everything speed sights will do. Warren Tactical. I'm still a big fan of Warren Tactical sights. A plain black rear and a tritium front. A white tritium front. Those do great on a carry pistol. My Glock 34 is black on black. Black front, black in the rear. I got Warren Savigny competition sights on it because it's a competition gun. And I'm out in broad daylight competing. Black on black sights typically work just fine for me. My Glock 17 has Warren sights with a black rear and a fiber optic front. I like that combination. So there's so many things that you can do with Glock sights or any pistol sights that, you know, some pistols come out of the box with really expensive sights, you know, real expensive, nice night sights. If they're really good night sights and you like them, then don't change them. But if you're buying a pistol that does not come with night sights, most of the time you're probably going to want something more eventually. So I think it's kind of a good idea. Glock saves the money because they figure, you know what, you're going to want something more anyway. So why should they spend a whole bunch of money putting sights on a gun that they know you have a 90% chance of changing and buying your own? So they would rather that you spend their money rather than Glock spending their money. You know, simple business decision. But I'm glad that Damien reminded me of that, so I wanted to clear that up, especially for new shooters. In the recent new shooter podcast, I think that's when I mentioned that. New shooters, don't worry. If you buy a brand new Glock pistol, you can get by while you're learning. While you're a beginner, you can get by with the Glock sights. Eventually, like I said, once you get past beginner level, you're probably going to want more, or you're going to want a different type. So something else somebody asked me about, changing parts on a concealed carry gun. You know, this is somewhat of a controversial argument, isn't it? This is the kind of argument that starts bar fights. I borrowed that from Tom Gresham. I think he likes to say that. You know, you can start a bar fight with this argument. You can. You know, what kind of modifications should I make to my carry pistol? You're going to have a million different opinions as to what to do to your carry pistol. I'll just tell you what I do to mine, and they serve me very well. I give every pistol a 1,000-round trigger job. I did a whole podcast on it, and I've explained it many times what a 1,000-round trigger job is. Give your gun a 1,000-round trigger job first. I do change sights. I modify sights. I like to have an easy-to-obtain front sight. I really find that orange color works best for me. Anything in orange. Which is why I like the orange front Trijicon HDs. I like the orange front Ameriglow Hackathons. I like There's red fiber optic sights if you put the Warren Tacticals on. I like red or orange up front because it stands out and it stands out nicely. Green fiber optic is good for my eyes. It's just not quite as good as the red. Your mileage might vary. But I do make those changes for sure on a concealed carry gun. As far as triggers, I leave them alone. I don't change triggers on my concealed carry guns. I learn to shoot the triggers that the gun came with. I practice until I get good with that trigger for obvious reasons. And again, you know, some people say, oh, it's okay, Bob, you can go ahead and drop the 3.5 pound connector in your Glock, that's fine. Or you can take an M&P and you can put an Apex trigger kit in there and lighten it up, you know, down to 4.5-5 pounds and you're going to be okay. I don't want to get into that argument because I see both sides of it. That's a personal preference issue right there. I leave mine alone. If I want a gun with a lighter trigger to carry, I buy a gun with a lighter trigger. Like, for example, a 1911 that has a much lighter single action trigger. But then again, the trade-off is it's got a thumb safety, which, you know, I don't care for as a primary carry gun. So, you know, there you go. That's kind of what the modifications I make to a carry gun. I'm a big fan of grip work. Any grip work that you want to do, grip reductions, texturing, changing out back straps, whatever. Whatever you can do to make that grip feel better in your hand, by all means do it. Grip work is awesome. As far as the controls, one of the reasons I really like the Gen 4 Glocks is the magazine release button. I think Glock did a great job with their mag release button on the Gen 4s. First of all, it's reversible for left-handed shooters. Second of all, the way it's shaped and the way it functions is excellent. If you got small hands, you typically don't have to adjust the grip to be able to press the magazine release button. I was never a fan of the extended mag buttons for third-gen pistols. I never really liked those because they stuck out too much from the gun, and when I was carrying it, sometimes it would poke me in the skin. And also, sometimes I found myself with either hand accidentally pressing the magazine release button when I didn't want to. That doesn't happen with the Gen 4 guns. So I really like that. So that's one of the reasons why I've switched over to Generation 4 for my Glock pistols. Now, my Smith & Wesson Shield, boy, I really like the magazine release button on there. But if you're going to change your mag release button out, just be real careful that you're not changing it to the type that makes it too easy to push. You don't want to make it too easy to push. That can cause a lot of problems as well. If you're going to change out the slide lock or slide release or whatever name you want to give it, the lever you push to make the slide go forward, that's the simple way I'm going to put it. I don't like extended slide releases or slide stops. I don't like those because, once again, my hands are rather big, my fingers are rather long, my thumbs are longer than most. I find myself accidentally, under recoil, hitting that slide release, and then therefore it doesn't lock open on the last shot, and I don't like that. So I like just the standard. I like the standard slide release or slide stop, and here's why. I don't use that method to release the slide and chamber a new round anyway. I use the overhand tug method. So for me, it's truly a slide stop. It stops it from closing and it locks it open on the last shot. And when I insert a fresh magazine, I use the overhand tug method and kind of like slingshot that magazine forward. So I don't use my thumb to hit the magazine release, so I really don't care what size it is, except I don't want it to be too big so that I don't hit it by accident during recoil. Now, one more modification to handguns, to concealed carry guns, that I want to talk about because it's been asked. I've had this question come to me many times, so let me go ahead and answer it here. People have asked me about barrels for a concealed carry gun. Now, I'm not talking about competition guns, folks. I'm talking about concealed carry, CCW weapons. I'm not talking about competition guns. Maybe I'll do a competition gun episode in the near future, but I'm talking about concealed carry weapons. As far as a different barrel, if you want another barrel of the same caliber because you think it's a better quality barrel or it gives you some advantages the factory barrel doesn't give you, fine. I am not a huge fan of barrels that change the caliber of a gun for concealed carry, with the exception of a few. I don't particularly care for the 40 caliber to 9mm conversion barrels in Glocks or M&Ps, for example, or I think even XDs. One of the reasons I'm not a big fan of those is because I've heard various reports of not so good reliability. And, you know, some people say you have to change the extractor or the ejector or both, and you definitely have to use different magazines. You know, obviously, if you're changing from 40 down to 9mm. And then some people say, oh, no, I'm fine. I can use the same extractor and it's worked flawlessly. Or I can use the same ejector. You're changing the dynamics of the way that gun runs. It was built to be a 40. In my opinion, leave it as a 40. If it was built to be a 45, leave it as a 45. If it was built to be a 10mm, leave it as a 10mm. The only exception I would put on that is 40 and 357 SIG. 40 and 357 SIG are essentially the same except for the necked down end of the cartridge because the 357 SIG bullet is smaller, but it's essentially a 40 caliber case. So if your gun was built for 40, you don't have to do anything. Just change the barrel. Change the barrel, and you can probably even get away with the same magazines and load your 40 or 357 SIG into it and fire away. The extractor is probably going to be fine. The ejector is going to be fine because the case size is essentially the same except for a small little area in the front, which really doesn't matter too much for extraction. So I would say just go ahead and do that. Make that conversion. That's pretty cool. And again, carry pistol. I want maximum reliability. I don't want anything to compromise the reliability of my concealed carry handguns. And the big reason is this, folks. You know what? When the crap has hit the fan, when your day is so bad that you got to pull your gun to save your life and use it, I don't want anything to go wrong. I don't want to leave anything to chance. I don't care if I've shot 2,000 rounds flawlessly with my conversion barrel. There's always that chance that that barrel could cause a problem because it wasn't really meant to be in that gun. Now, you might say, well, Bob, guns jam for other reasons too. Yep, they jam because you have bad magazines or you got bad magazine springs or you got bad ammo. But if I've got good mags with good magazine springs and if I have the proper magazines for the gun, and I'm using high-quality ammunition, and the gun is mostly stock, the way it was meant to be set up, and just changing out the sights, and pretty much that's about it. I have, in my opinion, probably ensured that that gun is going to be as reliable as it possibly can be. So when I need it the most to go bang, it has the best chance of going bang. Grip work and sights, stuff like that, that's usually not going to compromise the reliability of a pistol. And usually extended magazine release buttons are not going to really compromise the reliability of the gun. I told you how I feel about that, though. For me, my hands are too big for them. That's pretty much what I want to say about concealed carry guns. So everyone that goes in a holster and goes on my belt or everyone that goes in my pocket is completely stock except for changing out some sights. And they all have 1,000-round trigger jobs. Okay, well, folks, with that said, that pretty much wraps up this episode. Actually, before I let you go, a couple things I've got to tell you. Let's see. It's too late. By the time you hear this podcast, it's too late for our June 1st drawing on the Shooters Club. Congratulations to the winners. on June 1st that won the first round of giveaways on the Shooters Club. Now, there's going to be another round, but we just gave away a Concealment Solutions Black Mamba holster. We just gave away a free sturdy belt. We just gave away an outside-the-waistband Kydex holster by White Dog Holsters. On July 4th, we're doing a drawing for 250 rounds of 9mm ammo and two tickets to any of the courses that Ben and I teach all the way through 2014. So the rest of this year and next year, you can come to any of the classes at no charge if you're one of the winners on the July 4th drawing. We're giving away two tickets to our classes and 250 rounds of 9mm FMJ practice ammo. Okay? So if you want to support the efforts that we do, we just put up some really cool videos. Ben just put up a video on how to clear a house. Really good. And it's the, most of them are videos from the classes that we've taught. Join the Shooters Club. Go to handgunworld.com and check out the Shooters Club and get signed up. It's an internet membership, good for 1 year. And you can read some excellent reviews at the bottom of the Shooters Club page. You'll see some students' reviews that are pretty good on it. As far as classes, there's still time to sign up for the San Antonio two-day class that me and Ben are doing, Beyond Concealed Carry Level 2. And on July 13th, don't forget about our skill-building workshop. That's just a short four-hour, half-day course from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. We're going to do it during the morning hours mostly, which is going to make sure that it's cool because San Antonio in middle of July can be kind of hot. We're going to pick moving and shooting, malfunction clearing, and performing reloads. And we're going to work on just those three techniques for about 2 or 2.5 hours. And then we're going to have some fun steel shooting. We got some new steel targets, that move, and we're going to have some competition, some man-on-man steel competition down in San Antonio July 13th. Bring about 150 to 200 rounds for that one. And that's only $75. You can get signed up by going to handgunworld.com, and you'll see a link that says skill building class. Last but not least, don't forget about Glenn Tate's book. Check out the recommended book section in my Amazon store. Many thanks. So many of you are buying products from Amazon, and you're doing it on my Amazon link, my account, my store, on my page. That helps me out. I get a small commission and helps come back to the show and helps you support the show. So find my Amazon store on my website, bookmark it, save the link, use that to shop on Amazon. I'd appreciate that. With all that said, folks, thank you very much. I appreciate you listening to yet another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Remember that the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe, and I'll talk to you next week.